Florida tries to hold a primary as it battles COVID-19. Hello and welcome to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. Polls are open and Floridians are voting, but how many decided not to vote today?
Unfortunately, I've made the difficult decision to not vote in an abundance of caution for myself and my family.
We're going to take a look around South Florida to see who avoided the polls, who early voted, and who's casting their vote now. Also, schools are closed for at least the rest of the month, but that doesn't mean students are not working. Many are expected to do assignments from home. That's easy for some and difficult for others. We'll hear about how this is playing out for families. Finally, we'll hear how concerts are continuing in the time of coronavirus through technology. All of that today on Sundial. First, the news. Hello and welcome to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. Thanks so much for joining us. It's primary day in Florida, and it's bound to be an unusual one. Ohio and Louisiana postponed their primaries due to concerns over the spread of COVID-19. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis said it will remain today. A number of polling places that were in nursing homes or assisted living facilities have changed as required by the state. If you need to find your voting site, we have an updated list at WLRN.org, and we've been hearing from some of you about voting concerns.
My name is Amanda, and I became a citizen of the United States just over a year ago. I was very excited to be able to vote in the primary on March 17th. This would be my first time voting in the United States. Unfortunately, I've made the difficult decision to not vote in an abundance of caution for myself and my family.
I took advantage of the early voting last week. My experience was a good experience. I was the only one there, so in and out within minutes, I would say. So that was definitely a plus. They also had hand sanitizer in light of everything that's going on. It was nice to see that they had those measures in place to protect them and myself.
Hi, my name is William Donahue. I am a resident of Delray Beach. I went to my local polling station to vote today, got there at 7:30. When I got there, they were still setting up the signs. They were still setting up the polling booths. The poll workers didn't know which polling locations were open or closed because of coronavirus 805. Then I had to leave because I start my job at 8:30. I'm just hoping to be able to get back to the polling location by or before 7.
Well, are you still voting today? How are you preparing for concerns over the spread of the virus? Tweet us at WLRN Sundial or find us on Facebook or call us 800-743-9576. That's 800-743-WLRN. Joining us now is the Miami Herald's David Smiley and WLRN's Danny Rivero. Gentlemen, thank you so much. By the way, we're also expecting Mayor Francis Suarez to join us. He's currently at home self-quarantining after he tested positive for COVID-19. David, I want to start with you. What do early voting numbers and mail-in ballots suggest about Florida's voter participation this year?
Well, I was just talking to someone who tracks voter turnout and gets live numbers from most of the supervisors in the state. And it looks like Republican turnout's going to be down pretty significantly from 2016. But Democrats should probably feel good about their turnout. Looks like maybe we'll see 1.6 million ballots or something like that cast. A lot of those ballots were by mail. About 40% is going to be the number. A lot of Democrats now are moving to mail ballots, which is obviously at this point a good thing in this climate. And I think for the Democratic Party, that's a positive sign for them because they've really spent a lot of efforts trying to move voters, in particular voters who don't actually vote really traditionally, to mail ballots.
And have you heard anything about any problems or any challenges today, considering, again, what we're dealing with?
We've heard some concerns about voters getting the wrong ballot, Democrats getting Republican ballots, things like that today. But supervisors have told us that those were problems that were quickly fixed. I do think that there's some concern, legitimate concern about whether voters will struggle to learn if their precincts have been moved. For instance, the precincts at senior centers have been moved, and dozens have been moved around the state. So there will probably be some confusion. I haven't specifically heard of any.
Danny, remind us of what Governor DeSantis and Secretary of State Laura Lee said as to why Florida's moving forward with the primaries when we see other states moving theirs back.
Right. Well, the governor and the Secretary of State have repeatedly said at this point that, you know, we have these latest CDC guidelines and the latest White House guidelines of no gatherings of 10 people or more. And they've been pretty clear saying, you know, this primary presidential election is not a general election. They're not expecting large crowds or particularly long lines at any polling sites. As David just mentioned, a very large group of people have already voted. People that are not affiliated with any political party can't vote because we have a closed primary system. So basically they're saying you're going to show up to a polling place and you'll be in and out and you shouldn't experience many crowds at all. So it should be within those guidelines. Then additionally, there's, you know, a wide availability of hand sanitizers and other hygiene products.
Have you heard of any problems so far?
Well, I mean, kind of along the lines of what David just said, there is.
Okay. I may have lost Danny, but that's okay. We'll get him back on. I still have David Smiley here with me. You know, David, what are we seeing on social media with regards to vote? Coming back to this idea of voter turnout, people showing up to the polls. Do we get the sense that the COVID-19 scare has kept anybody away?
Right now, it doesn't look like it is, at least based on the sheer numbers. It looks like we're going to maybe have a 500,000 Democrats vote today. But certainly on social media, people talking about empty polling places, 20 polling booths and 18 of them being empty, poll workers outnumbering voters 5-1, stuff like that. But because there's so much voting that is done by mail and at early voting centers in Florida, it's really difficult, I think, to until we see the actual numbers to actually get a handle on, you know, to what extent there may be real depression on election day because of coronavirus.
Again, it is primary day here in Florida. Have you gone out to vote yet, or do you plan to do so this afternoon? And how are you preparing with concerns surrounding the spread of COVID-19? You could tweet us at WLRN Sundial, or you could find us on Facebook. We'd love to hear your thoughts, your stories, some of your experiences so far. Also, you can call us at 800-743-9576. That's 800-743-WLRN. All right, Danny, we got you back. There was a lawsuit filed last night to ensure that voters aren't disenfranchised in this process, considering what we're going through.
Right. This was filed by a group of progressive organizations, the Dream Defenders, New Florida Majority, and basically they're saying that the state has failed to extend its vote by mail deadlines. They're asking an extension for that to adjust the early voting deadlines. And they're basically saying that the state didn't treat this as an emergency situation that it is, or that it didn't take enough emergency measures to ensure that everyone will be able to vote.
And in the lawsuit, I mean, what are they asking? What are they hoping to achieve? I mean, just push this back or extend the deadline?
Exactly. Yeah, they're asking to extend the deadline for requesting a vote by mail ballot till March 27th. So give a little bit more cushioning there, just allowing people to request ballots be sent to them by fax or email for people that are overseas or with the military, and just generally give a little bit more cushion because they're basically making the argument that many people, especially the elderly, are less, they're not going to want to go out, especially if they have an illness right now or they're concerned about contracting something.
And Governor DeSantis spoke earlier this morning, but what did he say about any concerns over the primary today?
So Governor DeSantis has repeatedly said that, you know, we're going to vote, that if we don't vote, it's going to somehow send the signal that the state has been paralyzed, and he doesn't think that's the case. You know, last week he made the comment that, you know, people voted during the Civil War, so we're not going to let this stop our primaries from going on. And just to add something, in Ohio, the governor did cancel or postpone the primaries. And a court order came down saying you can't do that on the last day. And he went and did it anyways. So there's probably going to be some big legal battles over that, because that's a strange way to run a primary or to not run a primary. So DeSantis also, just by sticking to the plan, he kind of avoided some of those legal questions that they're going to be seeing in Ohio.
I'm talking with WLRN's Danny Rivero and the Miami Herald's David Smiley. Again, today is primary day. A number of polling locations throughout the region have changed, so if you want to know more about that, go to WLRN.org to get the latest information. And if you've gone out to vote today, we'd love to hear your thoughts on what you're seeing, what you're experiencing, what you're doing to protect yourself as you cast your vote. Again, find us on Twitter at WLRN Sundial or on Facebook, or call in 800-743-9576. We've heard from Catherine in Monroe County.
Hi, this is Katie from Miami. I regret not participating in early voting. I really do want to participate with the primaries. However, with everything that's going on with COVID-19, it's giving me great pause. I live with family who are over the age of 65, and one is also immunocompromised as being a heart transplant recipient. Therefore, I really cannot risk being a carrier or catching anything and bringing it into the household. It's a really tough decision for me, but our health is utmost importance.
A lot of concern again today. A lot of people are trying to do the social distancing, staying away from a lot of folks, but again, it's primary day. David, move a little bit to politics, because there was a debate on Sunday between Vice President Joe Biden and Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders. Do we get any sense from the polling data as to how that may have moved Florida voters?
Well, just real quick on the lawsuit, a judge denied the temporary restraining order motion. Another reporter was telling me just now. Seems like it may be moot, although there can always be action after the election today.
Thank you for the update.
Thanks, David.
But in terms of any effect, I haven't seen any polls that have measured since Sunday. I mean, it's only been, 2 days? But I don't think it's going to matter. I mean, Biden is so far ahead of Sanders in all four of these states, although I guess Ohio is not voting today. But, I think the strong likelihood is that Sanders is going to get beat pretty soundly today, and you're going to see the pressure really ramp up from Biden supporters and Democrats to get Sanders to suspend his campaign and let everybody get behind Biden at a time where the country's in crisis.
Danny, I wanted to ask about, because we can't forget that, there's a portion of the population that regained their right to vote in 2019, but they're not going to be able to participate in the primary. Remind us briefly of what's happening with those folks who were impacted by Amendment 4.
Right. Yeah. Just a quick update on that. There is a federal trial on this that's scheduled for next month to start. And as of now, it's still scheduled for that, as far as I'm aware. We've seen, some courts and district courts and local courts take measures to largely stop or change the way that they're operating these trials or court hearings in general. But that's basically where it stands right now. The 17 plaintiffs that are in that case can vote today. And for everyone else, we're going to have to wait for a full trial.
We've been talking with WLRN's Daniel Rivero and the Miami Herald's David Smiley. Gentlemen, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
And again, today's primary still going on. We want to hear from you if you are voting today and what kind of experiences you're having as you go to the polls. You find us on Twitter at WLRN Sundial or on Facebook. Let us know your story. I want to go over to the phones before we go to Mayor Suarez, to Alberto, who's in Parkland. Alberto, thanks for waiting.
Thank you.
Alberto, tell me about your experience today.
I went to vote around 10 a.m. in Parkland, and it's River Glades Elementary, and the main gates were closed, so I was going to go back home. Then I saw a person, and I asked them if he knew. And he said, yeah, keep going. There are very tiny signs in between a park and the entrance for buses to the school, and that's where they had it. I was the only person voting today.
You were the only person. You drove up. The gate was locked, but then they told you, go ahead, go ahead in, and there was no signage.
Right. There were the very tiny signage next to the school on the south side of the school. There's a little park next to the school. So there's an entrance that goes, looks like it's going to the park. And it's actually for the buses when the school drops the kids.
Okay.
And that's where they had it. So.
And you got to vote?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
And I have my mask, and I was prepared for big crowds, and no crowds.
Well, Alberto, at least you got to vote, and thank you so much for the call. Thank you for letting us know. That's an interesting one at Parkland. Alberto, thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Again, share with us your stories. Find us on Twitter or Facebook. Michael tweeted at us, I just voted at Precinct 56 in Port St. Lucie, and there was just me and four poll workers, so no worries about a crowd. There were two voting machines, and I was number 31. Get out there and vote. I want to turn things over now to Mayor Francis Suarez of Miami. He has remained in self-quarantine, but he's been communicating with people through Instagram with daily updates on his conditions. Mayor Suarez, thank you so much for joining us.
It's a pleasure to be here with you, and I'm fairly well. I'm experiencing very mild symptoms so far. I'm on day 6 confirmed with the virus at minimum, day 5 since I got the results, and I've been video blogging the experience on my Twitter account at Francis Suarez and at Francis X Suarez and Instagram. And I found that based on the messages that I've gotten, people have gotten a lot of comfort and calm just seeing someone who's on the other side of this issue, because everyone is on the, you know, should I get tested? Where do I get tested? You know, is there sufficient test? Everyone's sort of on one side of the issue. And my suspicion is that people, a lot more people probably have this virus already than think they have it or know they have it, just based on my experience, because it's hard for me to believe that I was only the second person in Dade County, you know, to get the virus. It's more likely that people have it and don't know it. And so that's why I think the social distancing is so important to make sure that it doesn't continue to spread and spread to those most vulnerable.
Let me start with this. How did you first get notified that you had it, and when did you get tested?
So what happened in my case, which was obviously a little bit different, is I was in a council meeting last Thursday, and it became public that a member of the Brazilian delegation of the president that was here on Monday and Tuesday in Miami confirmed positive for COVID-19. I received the delegation on Monday and on Tuesday. And so I spent, you know, a significant amount of time on Monday and Tuesday with in that group. And so, you know, I wasn't 100% certain that I had interacted with or had come into direct contact with the person, although it was likely that I had some level of contact because I said, you know, I shook hands with everyone who came in and had conversations with a lot of the people that were there. And so someone sent me a picture where the person that was infected and I are in the same picture in a pretty close proximity. So it was apparent that I had to quarantine myself immediately. So I did that. And once all that became public, the Department of Health actually reached out to me and asked me to come in and get tested. Like anyone who's been tested, I assumed, because I was asymptomatic, that I would test negative. And so the next morning when I got the call, I was obviously very shocked.
And you said you have symptoms. Could you tell me what you're experiencing right now?
My symptoms, Lewis, have been pretty minor. I've had the things that you would associate with essentially a common cold, stuffy nose. I've had a little bit of elevated temperature, but nothing beyond 100. I've taken only Tylenol. It's the only medication that I've taken. I haven't taken Tylenol for 2 days. I've had minor aches, that, you know, when you feel that flu onset where you have those minor sort of aches and pains. But other than that, you know, thankfully, on a scale of 1 to 10, I've put it, you know, no less than a 1 and no more than a 3 at any given moment.
So, you know, you find yourself in this situation, and obviously what's unique about it is you're the mayor of a major city. How are you performing your duties as mayor and still living your life, considering you have to be completely isolated from everyone?
I've been completely isolated from everyone. I've been able to do everything that I need to do as mayor remotely. Obviously, you know, now on a phone conference, I've done, I don't know, probably 30 interviews, national interviews, Skype. And so I've actually been working probably more than I should the last few days. My wife gives me a little bit of a hard time, but I have not been able to see her. I haven't been able to see my kids. So that's obviously been very, very difficult. And but you know, other than that, I mean, I've been able to do the normal things. I'm acting like I'm in college again. You know, washing my own sheets and folding my clothes, and you know, cooking. You know, making sure that I can have 3 square meals. And but I'm a healthy person. I'm lucky. I'm in my early 40s, and the reason why I did the video blog was because I'm on the other side of this issue. So many people are on the side of like, should I get tested? Do I need to get tested? And I'm on the other side of, I've been tested and I'm positive. Now what? Right. And I think there's a tremendous amount of anxiety related to this virus. And I wanted to at least show my story so that it can comfort some people who are very, very anxious. And those are the messages that I've received.
And you're sharing this story daily with folks again, on social media, on Instagram. But, you know, what would you say to Miamians right now, especially those who are considering going out to vote? This is a primary.
Yeah. Well, what I would say is to heed, the professional advice. We in the city and I took very dramatic action early, and we were criticized when we canceled Ultra and A Street. Some people said it was premature. And now, obviously, everybody agrees. We're now to a point where people are the president and Dade County is saying not to congregate in more than groups of 8. What I'm saying is, look, respect social distancing, number one. Number two, don't leave the house if you don't have to. If you can work remotely or if you can stay home, do that. If you're elderly, definitely do that. I think, they should do that. There's been talk about, ordering a lockdown of the city. Obviously that's something that we're considering, and I'm not even sure is within my emergency powers.
Mayor Suar, we're keeping up with everything that we hear from the governor and from the president every day when they hold a press conference. We will air those live to keep people informed. Mayor Suarez, I really appreciate you sharing with us, and hope you get better soon. But thank you for sharing with us daily.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Louis.
Again, Mayor Francis Suarez of Miami, diagnosed with COVID-19. He's in self-quarantine. We've been hearing from you. We heard from Taylor, who messaged us on Facebook saying that she is voting, wearing a mask, layered clothes to remove the top layer after she leaves the voting place, and with gloves at hand. This election is too important, she says, especially after what we've seen from Trump the past couple of weeks. All right, still to come. Schools are closed and kids are taking classes online, but not all kids have access to computers or enough food. How are school districts helping? Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. The COVID-19 pandemic is reshaping daily life for millions of Americans. In South Florida, schools are closed to help stop the spread of the virus. But what does that mean for the kids and families that depend on free or reduced breakfast and lunch? Now they're losing access to meals they rely on. Nearly 12% of homes in South Florida are food insecure. This means they don't know where their next meal is coming from. WLRN's Jessica Bakeman and WLRN's Nadesh Green join us now to talk about what these school closures mean on a professional and personal level. Ladies, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Lewis.
Thanks for having us.
Jessica, what is the state doing to make sure that families are able to get those free meals now that schools are closed?
Yeah, so the State Department of Agriculture is the one that oversees the distribution of food at schools. And so one thing they did was reactivate a program called Summer Break Spot, which is operating usually during the summer breaks to distribute food to families who rely on those free or reduced price meals that they get at school. And so a website called summerbreakspot.org. If you go to it, you can put in your address and see if there are any sites near you that are distributing food for children. There are 1,000 sites throughout the state that are doing that. Another thing that the state did was talk to the Federal Department of Agriculture to get a waiver so that they would allow school districts some more flexibility in how they distribute meals during the closures. So all of the school districts, at least Miami-Dade, Broward, and Palm Beach County so far, the 3 large school districts in South Florida, are distributing meals throughout at least this week. We're not totally sure yet what's going to happen next week because it was the previously planned spring break for those districts and they had not planned to distribute food during that break. But I know that they are reevaluating that decision now. But as for this week, the districts are trying some creative ways to distribute food.
Lakeisha Hood is the Food, Nutrition, and Wellness Director for the Florida Department of Agriculture and Consumer Services, and she explained this idea of curbside meal pickup or to go. This is what she said.
So we're seeing everything from distributions on the pickup loop, meals being distributed through the traditional school bus route, grab and go methods, drive through methods. We've seen some instances where there's a single meal service in a day, and both a lunch meal and a breakfast meal for the next day are provided.
Nadesh, this curbside pickup, how is that working, or how is that supposed to work?
Jessica could probably fill you in more on that since she's been covering like the curbside pickups. But, you know, students are able to drive up and, you know, the food is available. You take it to go. And the idea is so that people won't congregate and, you know, just a whole bunch of people won't be in the same spot at once. So they're trying to limit, you know, the exposure of how many people around each other following the CDC guidelines and the guidelines that are coming from the federal government at this point. Is that folks should be about 3 to 6 feet away from each other. So they're trying to limit congregating even for food pickup.
And Jessica, I mean, has that been working out? Or I know we're just really early into the week here.
Yeah, so I was able to get some data from school districts in terms of how this went yesterday. So in Miami-Dade, all public schools are opening for distribution from 9:30 to 12:30, 9:30 in the morning to 12:30 in the afternoon for breakfast and lunch, with the exception of one school that was closed last week in Bay Harbor Islands because there was a person there who had come into contact with students who had tested positive for COVID-19. So all of the other schools are distributing meals. And yesterday, the district distributed about 4,400 breakfasts and 6,200 lunches. In Palm Beach, they distributed more than 4,000 meals. I want to tell our listeners they should go to our website, WLRN.org, if they want out the specific of get that information. Like I said, at Dade, they're doing all the schools, but in Palm Beach, it's 30 schools, and in Broward, it's only certain days this week, and it's 9 schools. So you want to make sure that you double check where you're able to go to find those meals.
Again, go to WLRN.org. Jessica, President Trump at a press conference yesterday said that this battle with the virus could go to July or August. Are school districts and these food programs able to keep going?
Well, The programs are dealt with through government. I mean, that's who is funding the free and reduced lunch program typically. I don't know that anyone really has answers about what's going to happen going forward, especially because you could see with an economic downturn and so many families losing income because of the, you know, their jobs might be closing down, that there may be more families that are in need of food, more families that will qualify for free and reduced price lunch than is currently the case. So I couldn't really speak to whether there's going to be capacity to, you know, keep that going for months. But I know that the federal government, the state government, and the school districts are going to keep working to feed students the best they can. And there are also nonprofits and food banks that are trying to fill in some of the gaps where they can.
I'm talking with WLRN reporters Jessica Bakeman and Nadege Green. Schools across South Florida canceling classes, extending the spring breaks. You could find full coverage, this and the COVID-19 coverage that we have at WLRN.org. Nadege, you've been talking with other organizations that are helping the food insecure, like Feeding South Florida. I'd imagine they're having to do a lot more than they're used to right now.
Well, they're definitely stepping up, and they've also working with Broward and Palm Beach County schools as well to make sure that they're able to help in that regard. And certainly they'll be helping just the general public who's food insecure, so seniors, individuals who may not be able to get out or cannot afford to go out and buy additional groceries. You know, they have historically, you know, filled in that gap. even when there isn't a pandemic or, you know, a weather event or anything, Feeding South Florida is also always here, because we know that in our community, between Miami-Dade, Broward, and Palm Beach County, on average, it's 12% of homes that are food insecure. And so Feeding South Florida is here on a good day to help folks who are food insecure. But what we do know about pandemics and events like this is it really heightens and puts into focus the folks who are most at risk, the folks who are most vulnerable or even more vulnerable in events like this. And one of the things that Feeding South Florida has found is that it's really hard right now for them to get volunteers. So they need volunteers to help pack up those boxes for seniors and other folks and families who might need them. But because people are concerned about COVID-19 and, you know, gathering in groups, that, you know, that has been a challenge for them. So, but they are still doing the work. You know, their staff is doing the work, but they have relied in the past heavily on volunteers, and they've seen a sharp decrease in volunteers.
Right. I want to change the topics real quickly, staying on, we're still talking about COVID-19, but the other challenge here is the fact that, again, kids are not in school, and yet they still have to do their work. And Nadej, you have two boys in school, and I'm wondering, well, what's that like? They're doing their work online, right?
Right. So I have a kindergartner and a second grader, both of whom are students in Miami-Dade County Public Schools. And it has been, so the first day was fun. We were just trying to figure it out. You know, there were some issues with Class Dojo where some of the things were not uploading. And obviously there needs to be room for, you know, figuring it out, because I don't think typically you have all these parents on the system at once. And so there were like some minor technical issues on the first day. Today went smoother, but, you know, for parents, you know, I am lucky and I am privileged in that I have a job where I can work from home and, you know, I can work remotely and do what I need to do. But there are a lot of parents who are unable to do that.
Right.
When we talk about like frontline folks, not just the healthcare workers, but, you know, if you're a security guard and you work for one of our many luxury condo buildings, or you work in downtown Miami at a commercial building that's not yet closed, you have to go into work. That's not a job you can do from home. And
exactly.
If you have children, it's hard. Or if you work at one of the fast food restaurants, or if you work at a grocery store right now, these right. aren't jobs where you can take your kids to work with you, and you certainly can't stay home. And so for parents like that, child care is a challenge right now. There are people who still need child care. And that's hard to find. I know I've seen in the community there have been folks who've stepped up, or neighbors who are like, okay, the kids can come to my house. But there is going to be that need where there are folks in the community who need childcare who don't have it right now.
Right.
So they're trying to figure it out in the midst of all of this.
Jessica, briefly, how are schools helping those kids who don't have laptops, who don't have access to the internet?
Okay, so the Miami-Dade County Public Schools so far is the only district that is already doing distance learning. The other school districts in South Florida are preparing to make that transition at some point, probably after next week's previously scheduled spring break. And in Miami-Dade, the district has more than 200,000 devices, meaning computers, tablets, smartphones with large screens, that they are able and hoping to distribute to students. I'm told from the district that from Friday to yesterday, they distributed more than 46,000 devices. So they still have a lot left. They've been working to try to move devices between schools. Like if there's one school that has a lot more demand and the devices are running out, they're trying to shift those devices around to make sure that they can get them to the students who need them. I know that I've heard anecdotally that there are some schools or students that have not been able to get what they needed. I think the district is trying to work through that.
Yeah.
As far as the internet goes, Comcast is offering free internet for 60 days for people who qualify. That generally is people who already qualify for some type of government assistance.
Okay.
And you can go to internetessentials.com to learn more about that.
All right, Jessica, thank you so much. We heard from WLRN reporters Jessica Bakeman and Nadej Green. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks.
All right, still to come, we're going to see how the Florida Keys are responding to the pandemic. Plus, we're going to hear how two big-time musicians brought a concert to their fans.
Yeah.
Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. Well, let's head to the southernmost point of our listening area to hear how people are preparing and responding to COVID-19 concerns. Again, March is prime time for tourism in Key West. Lots of spring breakers expected in the city. WLRN's Monroe County reporter Nancy Klinginer has been following city and countywide response, and she joins us now. Nan, great to have you.
Thanks, Lewis.
So we've seen a number of bars, restaurants, gyms close on their own. The governor now asking all these facilities to do so by 5 p.m. tonight. What about Key West? What's going on down there?
Well, the bars are closing at 5 p.m. because we are in the state of Florida, even though we sometimes like to think otherwise. So, yeah. And that's going to be a shock. You don't see Key West with the bars closed, especially when it's packed with tourists. You know, so you see that in the run-up to a hurricane and immediately after, of course. But by then, the tourists have all presumably left town. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting around here.
And it's spring break. So what have you seen when it comes to that spring break tourism? I mean, is it as busy as usual, or have people left?
I think some people have left, but some people are here, or even were already here. It was certainly busy over the weekend. The bars were packed over the weekend. If you look on our website, the post about the governor saying spring break has really got to go, we illustrated that with a video from a bar on Duval Street that was totally packed on Saturday night. Just this morning I went down to the southernmost point because the city, you know, quote, closed the southernmost point, and they had barricades up in front of it. But people were still standing there and posing. There wasn't the long line of people, but there were people, and there were people in their St. Patrick's Day gear already, you know, getting ready to party at 11 a.m.
So in Key West and in the Keys in general, how are people taking the threat of COVID-19?
Well, I think it's, you know, it's like everywhere. There's a huge range of people who are taking it very, very seriously. Social distancing, isolation, making sure they don't go out, making sure they don't get too close to other people. And then there are the people who, obviously, from the behavior we've been saw over the weekend, you know, the Marathon Seafood Festival went on that attracts a lot of people. And so we haven't had any cases here yet. You know, if you're paying attention, you're thinking that's just probably because they haven't been diagnosed yet. And we have had some testing in the Keys, but
what are you hearing from longtime residents compared to like tourists?
Well, I mean, the tourists who are still here are obviously willing to be here. It's like the tourists who were at Disneyland over the weekend or Disney World. So there's that. And most long-term residents that I know are saying, you know, just be safe, stay home, and stay away from other people. And there were a lot of people who were very, very concerned while the cruise ships were still coming in. That obviously went away over the weekend. The last one left here on Sunday. But people were very upset with the city for still allowing cruise ships in while that was going on.
So we're in this primary today, and I wanted to know what you've been hearing from voters, how they feel about, you know, going out and voting today, what the Monroe County Supervisor of Elections has said and done about preparing for today.
She said that they provided those Clorox wipes for all the polling stations and that they'd be wiping down the machines regularly, although not between every single voter. She said she also was not expecting a huge turnout, you know, in a presidential primary where there's an incumbent, only one party has a real reason to show up, although we also have a referendum on our ballot that everybody can vote on.
And, of course, the Monroe County Supervisor, Joyce Griffin. You know, South Florida, I mean, depends on tourism. That's just the important part of our lives down here. And this is such an important part of the year because of spring break and all these visitors we get for a lot of big events that have all been canceled. But what are you hearing from business owners about the fact that, you know, the whole country basically now is like, let's shut it all down and wait this out?
Yeah, and we are more dependent on tourism than even South Florida as a whole. You know, we don't have a lot of other industries. We've got commercial fishing, seafood, but China put a big damper on that early on in this coronavirus crisis because China is the biggest market for spiny lobster. And then the military is another big part of our economy, and they're still going. So there's that. So yeah, people are very worried, especially the small businesses, you know, the people who run the kayak tours or the bike tour or, you know, a little store that really depends on tourists. And of course, now the restaurants and the bars are going to take a big hit.
Yeah, but I mean, have you heard from some of those mom and pop shops? Like, is there a concern they could even survive this?
Yeah, I mean, I think everybody's just been in this hectic what happens next mode. And there's been some thinking that we're our own special little place, but I think that is ending, you know, practically as we speak.
You know, the Keys have been through so much in their history. And a lot of the time we think about it, it's usually Mother Nature's a storm that comes through and disrupts everything. But this isn't like a hurricane. I wondered if how people really just in their day to day are kind of living through this compared to when they know a storm is coming.
Yeah. I mean, like all over Florida, I think we've seen some of that hurricane behavior with bottled water and toilet paper disappearing from the shelves, even though there's no reason really for either of those things. But yeah, I mean, I think the main concern is that it's not like a hurricane in that it's going to last for a really long time.
Well, we've been talking with our Monroe County reporter, Nan Klinger, in our Southernmost Bureau, again, getting an update on what's happening in Key West and in the Keys. And if you live down there, always share with us. Tell us what you think about this pandemic and how you are dealing with it. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Nan, thank you so much.
Thanks, Lewis.
We did hear from George, who tweeted at us, "I voted this morning and wasn't too worried. I haven't experienced long lines at my precinct before, and it wasn't busy today. The staff was nice, and they wore gloves. My only concern was using the community pen to vote, but I hope that it was cleaned and we kept our distance." All right. We will have, again, updated results on today's primary and continued coverage of COVID-19. Go to WLRN.org. Don't forget, tonight at 7 p.m., we have a special edition of the Florida Roundup with host Tom Hudson and Melissa Ross. Concerts have been canceled to prevent the spread of this coronavirus. Thousands of disappointed fans in Colombia missed out on the chance to see Latin Grammy winners Alejandro Sanz and Juanes over the weekend. But the musicians came up with an idea on Friday that they spurred into action. They would live stream a musical performance Sunday afternoon from the new Abbey Road Studios here in Miami. With help from Grammy-winning Oscar producer Julio Reyes Coppola, the two put on an hour-long jam session that was streamed live on YouTube for free. More than 1.6 million people have watched the stream since Sunday, with thousands of others commenting. WLRN producer Chris Remington spoke with Reyes yesterday from the Abbey Road studio.
Tell me about when the idea first surfaced to say, hey, we can't have these concerts live in person. What about streaming it online?
It was very interesting, Chris, because I was thinking about it. We were talking with a lot of friends, musician friends. And we've been talking about this for a long time. I actually got a message from Alejandro Sanz suggesting me to do that. So it was a very nice piece of synchronicity.
Tell me a little bit about what you sort of envisioned for this live streaming concert, speaking with Juanes and Alejandro Sanz, in terms of what it would look like, what it would sound like. What did you guys have in mind?
Everything went super natural, you know. I produced the last Alejandro Sanz album, so I knew most of the repertoire, and I'm also very close to Juanes' repertoire. So I was able to contact my dear friends, Gonzalo Rubalcaba, who is an amazing jazz piano player from Cuba that lives here, and also Guillermo Badalá in the bass. And they just came to my mind immediately, so I called them, let's be ready, and then it was just a matter of choosing the right songs. But behind everything, Chris, I think we all share the same passionate respect for music and the capacity of transformation that music has. You know, you can actually create a parallel universe where you are free of your problems for 4 minutes or 5 minutes that a song lasts.
Something interesting that you said there, you produced Alejandro Sanz's last album. You're familiar with Juanes's album. But what this was a concert and not a live album. Can you explain sort of how you go about producing what is a live stream concert in a much different setting from a normal concert would be?
Yes, it is completely different. We were basically having a jam. We had some chord progressions on papers. I mean, some musicians were just playing by ear. And what happened in the concert was actually like a live jam. The whole magic was happening. And that's the supernatural aspect of music, where you can actually communicate with your friends on a deeper level.
One of the interesting things that I noticed, I watched some of the live stream, you had so many people, thousands at a time, that were commenting about the live performance and sending their messages in. What was that experience like to see fans react to the music in real time?
Beautiful, beautiful, unbelievable. This is maybe one of the most beautiful aspects of new technologies, you know, to actually interact during these conditions.
I'm curious if there was a particular comment or something that a fan said that really stood out to you, or maybe it was a couple different messages that really resonated with you personally.
Well, actually, in the middle of the concert, we got the sad news that the president of Universal Music got the virus. So we were a little bit shocked because it happened in the middle of the concert.
Wow, and how did you guys respond to that?
No, we were shocked. We were looking at each other like, wow, this is really happening, no? We were very, very responsible all the time of saying, let's take this seriously. I actually have two friends in Spain with the virus, and it's very shocking. It is very sad to hear everything they have to say. So we were trying to keep this tone. It was not...
Yeah, no, I think that's an important point. You have two big public figures in Juanes and Alejandro Sanz, and I'm wondering how they use this concert and this moment as an opportunity to educate people about social distancing and the importance of it.
Exactly. That was very clear from the beginning, from Alejandro, from Juanes. Because they were really sad about canceling all the concerts. I mean, this is something completely unexpected, and I don't know if the companies are going to be able to return the money to the guys that had the tickets. So they were really, really sad about it. That was the most honest motivation, to give them this peace of mind and to try to do something, you know.
That was WLRN producer Chris Remington speaking with music producer Julio Reyes Coppolo. You could see the YouTube live stream on our social media at WLRN Sundial. And that is Sundial for this Tuesday, March 17th. Coming up tomorrow on the program, we're going to follow up on results of tonight's primary with USF political science professor emerita Susan McManus. We should have a better sense by tomorrow how much the COVID-19 pandemic impacted voter turnout. Plus, April was expected to be the start of the 2020 census count. Will the count continue as planned? How could the pandemic impact our ability to get accurate numbers? We're going to hear from a key census leader. And a reminder, tonight, WLRN will carry a special edition of the Florida Roundup with Tom Hudson and Melissa Ross. You can find updated primary coverage throughout the day in our newscasts and at WLRN.org. Well, we continue to hear from voters across our listening area about their experience today, like Charlene Burke. She says, I got my ballot in the mail, but prefer to walk in. Today was no different. I arrived at 7 a.m. thinking that would be cleanest time of the day, given the least amount of people passed through by then. Three other voters were there at the same time. I practiced social distancing. I brought my own black pen and hand sanitizer, and I used them. I did not go into the voting booth, but stood and filled in the circle before performing machine taking my vote. Continue to share your experiences voting with us today on Facebook and Twitter. Search for us. Look up WLRN Sundial. We'd love to hear your stories or concerns. Maybe you're running into some issues. I know some folks found out the hard way their precinct has moved, it's changed, and maybe they didn't get that information. So we'd love to hear from you as to what some of those challenges are. Now, in spite of all of this stuff that we're going through, just a little breather, just a reminder, hey guys, we have a book club. something to kind of take your mind off everything. And we were reading this amazing book that you got to check out for this month. It's called Ordinary Girls, a Memoir by Jaquita Diaz. You can check out the interview we did with her not too long ago. Just go to WLRN.org. Find us on Facebook. Look up Sundial Book Club. Join. Just, again, something to get your mind off everything. It's a great read. Again, find us at WLRN.org or on Facebook or Twitter. I'm Luis Hernandez. Thanks so much for listening. Stay safe. Vote if you can today. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Yes, for a tea. Late mi corazón. Yes, for a tea. Que brillan mis ojos hoy. Yes, for a tea. Que vuelto a hablar de amor. Yes, for a tea.